So my invitation from last Sunday is still there. If anyone would like to preach on this text, you're surely welcome to do so. Don't everybody come at once. This is a continuation of last Sunday's text. It really does continue in many ways. It's calling us to a kind of radical, clear discipleship that's grounded in law. And that's okay. That's partly. It's not everything. Law isn't everything. I've always had, every congregation I've ever served have been congregations that always like to put in sermon titles. And the tradition usually ends when I walk in the door. Because I'm not very good at that. I don't come up with sermon titles very well. I've tried, and I'm not very good at it, so I just decide not to do it. But if I had to come up with one today, the title of this sermon would be More, More, More. Because that's what God calls us to do in our text today. More, more, more. We hear it in words like turn the other cheek, go the extra mile, give them the shirt off your back, love your enemies. And if that were not enough, he concludes with the words, be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. It's kind of a preparation for failure right off the bat, is it? I often wonder what is going through Jesus' mind to be saying those kinds of things to the people that he knows are imperfect, who, as we used to confess, are by nature sinful and unclean. We have difficulty being perfect. And when we make mistakes, what's the first thing we tell somebody? Well, I'm not perfect. Oh, yeah, we like to use that. And it's true, we're not. And so I oftentimes wonder, what is Jesus thinking when he says to 12 disciples, you know what they were like, hey, you got to be perfect like the Father in heaven. I just don't know what he was thinking about. And it wasn't just the disciples he was talking to, but largely I think in the Sermon on the Mount, even though it is reaching out to a lot of people, he is really focused on those who are his people, his followers, his disciples. And I think Matthew is focusing on them as well and trying to teach them, what does it mean to be a good disciple? What does it mean to be a servant? But the extremes are extraordinary. Did you know that in Roman law, a centurion could come up to any citizen and demand that they carry the goods that he had? In other words, his armor, his sword, everything they had with him, he could go up to them and say, you will carry this for me, but they were only required it to carry for 1 mile. And Jesus knew that tradition. And he says, heck, when they ask you for one, do more. Do a second mile. Did you know that it was against Jewish law for anyone to sue you for everything you had? You had the right to keep the shirt on your back, which was kind of a large kind of undergarment, similar to this one, not as baggy, that went all the way to the ground. They could sue you for everything, even the coat off your back, but they could not take your shirt. And what does Jesus say? He says, if they sue you for your coat, your outer garment, give them the under one as well. Run around shirtless if you have to. More. More. You remember what he said last week? I referred to it. We hear it throughout in a couple spots anyway in Matthew. You know, be more perfect or be better than the Sadducees and Pharisees. They lived according to the law. He outlines the law and then says, be even better than that. Be even better than the law. Be perfect. Do you realize that in the Old Testament you will find absolutely no word about loving your enemies? It's not there. It's not in the law. Nowhere does it say that. It does say love your neighbors, but hate your enemies. In fact, there was a group of people who had gathered together, banded together in Jesus' day, who are authors, we believe anyway, of the Dead Sea Scrolls. The man's thinking way ahead of me. The Dead Sea Scrolls. And in there it is very clear that they proposed that you hated your enemies and you worked contrary to them because they saw them as evil. What does Jesus say? You've heard it said. love your neighbors and hate your enemies. But I say to you, more love even your enemies. It's unbelievable the extent that Jesus calls his disciples to live, even to the point of being as perfect as the Father in heaven is perfect. It's a kind of a no-win situation. And so why does he say it? And why do we do it? Why do we struggle to do this? And it was, as I said last Sunday, we do this because we love God, because we love Jesus, and we love the world God has created here, of which we share, of which we are a part. We do so because we recognize the extent of God's commitment to us through Jesus Christ, giving the best that he had for the sake of our own salvation, for the sake of establishing a permanent and unbreakable bond between God and creation, between all of us, that there is nothing in this world that can sever that. It shall be maintained forever. When we know what God has done for us, then our response naturally, is it not? Is naturally that of love, is to return, is to be as good as God wants us to be, recognizing we may not fulfill that great expectation of being as perfect as the Father in heaven, but wanting to be as good as we can be, always improving, because we love God and we love Jesus and the world God has made. Basically, what Matthew is doing is trying to teach us to be a servant. It's hard to put our minds around that because, right, most of us don't have servants. Most of us don't have servants that come into our house, clean our house. You may have somebody to do that. I don't know. We had several when we lived in Argentina. When we came back, well, it fell back on our hands. We had to do it again. But it's hard to understand what a servant does. And so maybe we could compare it to someone who kind of has a servant role in our world, and that would be someone like a waiter or a waitress. Living in Argentina, we never had a waitress, ever. Waiting on tables was always the work of a man. There were always waiters there. And there was a particular restaurant. I can still see it. I can still taste its food. Unbelievable restaurant. Not far, several blocks away from the seminary, was a little place called Cantina de Juan. Doesn't have a real fancy name, you know. You know what a cantina is? It's just like kind of like a little hole in the wall, really. But it was a beautiful restaurant. And Mary and I, my wife and I, loved to go there whenever we were in town because it had the best steaks I had ever seen. I mean, the bife de lomo, which would be our, it's a large filet mignon. The guy knows Spanish, too. The filet mignon had some of the most incredible filet mignon I've ever had, and the T-bones were just unbelievable. But we went there not so much because of the food, but because of Juan, who waited on our table. He was an incredible guy. He loved his job, loved what he did. He loved to have people come and visit him. And he literally took care of us as though we were family. He met us at the door, even when we first met him the first couple times. And we always went back there, hoping he was still there, hoping that he would wait on our table. And he always did. He greeted us with a smile, led us to our favorite table every time we came. And he made sure that our time there was filled to the max. Our glasses of wine were always filled. Our steak was just as he had hoped. There was plenty of bread and butter on the table. The tablecloths were always exceptionally clean with cloth napkins. I mean, it was a beautiful hole in the wall that was just outstanding. Juan did an outstanding job. And he took it to the point where we trusted him so much that he actually convinced us every time we were there was a reason to stay for dessert. We stayed for dessert and a small coffee that was served afterwards, and he spilled it several times, something he didn't do very often. He was just an incredible guy, and he understood what it meant to be a servant to us while we were in that restaurant. And it brought us back time and time again. That's what it means to be a servant of God, to always do more and more and more, to always know what the norm is, but always to be willing to go beyond and to do so with a smile on our face and joy in our hearts, because the one we serve is God and Jesus and the world that God has made. We do those kinds of things because of who we are and because of what God has made us to be, servants with a definite, clear, concise example of how we are to be in this world, portrayed in places like Sermon on the Mount, the life of Jesus, and the life of so many other faithful people who heard the call of God to be servants in the world. What would a perfect servant be like as a member of St. Luke's? What do you think that person would look like? What would they do? Would they be the kind of person that you could find here every Sunday morning? Would they be the kind of person that every time a list goes up looking for the needs of people to participate or to even be leaders, they are some of the first to jump because they have a sense that it is God who calls them? Would a perfect servant, following the way of the perfect Father here at St. Luke's, be the kind of person so wanting to know what God has to say that they find themselves in so many opportunities of faith formation, wanting to hear and to listen and to be shaped by that very word? Would a perfect servant at St. Luke's be one who so longs to talk with God, they find themselves at every opportunity that they can, in large groups or by themselves, on their way to work, on their way home, at a time of free time at work or at school, or heaven forbid, even at night before we go to bed, long after the television is turned off, we find ourselves in silence, offering up our cares and concerns of the day and of our life, and silent to hear responses from God. What would a servant, faithful and true, perfect as the Father in heaven, appear like here at St. Luke's? Could it be you? Certainly calls you. But more importantly, what would that perfect servant be like in the world in which we live? I'll leave that question to you.